This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon, at Attia International. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is July 7, 1993, and this is tape 43, side 2. You were wanting to discuss a little bit more about Israel.
And well, we were going to talk about this gun that I got, and then we'll get into Israel.
Okay.
Because it's kind of a cute story. We had been, as I'd indicated, we'd been to Saudi Arabia, to Egypt, and into Syria. I had acquired some gifts and souvenirs. Dolores had, Lon had, Danny Miles had. Anyway, we had a lot of stuff. We're actually leaving any vestige of a trade mission going to Israel. That was the separate trip. That was what really triggered the trip to the Middle East, was you ought to come and visit Israel. Well, but we've got all of this stuff plus this gun. Well, the charge d'affaires said, well, we could send stuff through the embassy. I don't think he knew how much stuff we're going to send, but anyway, we packaged up, including this 38 Smith & Wesson. And then to skip rather quickly, we'd gone to Israel. I'd come back. I was home back in Salem. We kept waiting to hear from the State Department, you know, as when did this all arrive. And it was really kind of a cute story. Jerry Thompson came, and she was chuckling, and she said that the State Department had called, said the packages had arrived. Oh, wonderful. The governor's really been waiting for this. And then whoever was on the other end said, do you know there's a G-U-N in one of these boxes? She laughed and said, yes, we know there's a G-U-N in one of those boxes. So, anyway, finally arrived, and the Smith & Wesson was there. I saw the Smith & Wesson representative, I don't know, a few months later. Said, can you check on this? You know, I'm trying to wonder, this is American Smith & Wesson in Syria. Oh, yeah, I gave them the serial number, and they had sold in 1973, that would have been 11 years earlier, 300 of those to, it was in French, but it was the Lebanese army.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how it got from the Lebanese army to my friend, the governor of Humps, you know, 11 years later, but anyway, that's the story on the Smith & Wesson.
It wasn't an old gun.
No, it's a modern cartridge, 38 Smith & Wesson.
And why did you want it?
Well, I told you, you know, I just said, I'm, you know, in that part of the world, you've got to be very careful when you admire anything. And I said, gee, I know what that is. That's a gun, and I collect guns. And then he says, here. And I said, no, yes, here. No. Anyway, that's how I ended up with it. And I'm delighted to have it. It's a great souvenir, great story for me anyway.
Uh-huh.
And it's not something I would go out and buy. I mean, it's I like older guns, and but anyway, it's kind of neat to have. I've got that little story attached to it, so it's kind of fun.
Huh.
Well, we went to Cyprus, as I think I already indicated, because we had to go through Cyprus, and I told you about the topless ladies there on the beach and all, but we boarded the plane in the evening. It was dark, and again, I told you how they security and they mm-hmm. strapped our, including Dolores' clothes bag, our luggage. We landed in Israel. We spent 9 days in Israel, and they've got a regular deal. I mean, they got people coming over all the time. They invite people. It's part of their PR thing. They tell their own story. And we had a guide, his name was I'll think of it pretty soon.
Did you feel like you were being hit with a political propaganda from the very beginning?
Well, not from the very outset, but very clear, you know. I'm thinking I'm going to a very historic part of the world. And that's what I'm thinking. A little bit of cynicism. One of the scheduled things is to plant a tree in the forest.
Right.
And I think I may have mentioned it depends on who's there, whose forest it is. It was the Tom McCall Forest and the Governor's Straub Forest, and I suppose it was the Atiyah Forest while we were there, and it's been whose ever forest has been there ever since. A little dedication for Tom McCall there, had a little marker, planted some trees, and I was viewing that a little cynically, kind of chuckling, really, not in anger. The first thing they did when we landed, it was to take us to the Holocaust Museum they have. And incidentally, while we were there at that place, there was some disturbance downtown. Small bombing or something was going on downtown. And I suppose that's why Lon got a little bit nervous. And I don't recall, I think I did mention that having gone through those three Arab countries, that he wasn't at all worried, but when he got to Israel, he got real nervous. And he got a 38 pistol from the embassy and carried it all the time we were there. But that was their first shot. And Jacob Pianini was our guide. He was a captain in the Israeli army. He was not a young man, but then he was a kid. He wasn't an old man. He just, I don't know where he was, middle 40s or late 40s or something like that. Very personable, very nice guy. But I would tell you, we went quickly. We went through and we went to all these historic sites and ruins and things of that kind. But about and stayed at a kibbutz overnight. That's all part of their tour thing. But I finally told Lewis, I guess it was about the third night when you were asking about, you know, feeling like they were trying to persuade you of their views. I said, you know, I have now the Sea of Galilee and where the Sermon on the Mount is and all of these ruins, and some of them have been restored, and where Jesus was born and Mary and all of this, which is marvelous. I said to her, you know, I really don't care where the barbed wire is and where they shot up the Syrians or the Egyptians, but you see, that was all part of their... This all works into their spiel. We went to one place where there's some ruined tanks, I think, and this is where they shot up some Egyptians. And obviously, on the Golan Heights, it was all the stories about where they had surrounded and banged up the Syrians. And then he was talking about in the old town in Jerusalem, where the, you know, where they were doing some shooting. This is now the Captain Pianini was telling us. I said, I really don't care about this, you know, but that was part of their spiel. I took a photograph. They seemed to yearn to hang on to the terrible things. It was sort of a main road. This is not in downtown, but on the edge of downtown. I can't tell you downtown where. And another, at least two-lane highway. But right on the corner was a children's playground. And you could see it. You know, swings and things to climb on. It was a children's playground. And on the corner was an old cannon. Now, I said, you know, that's in Congress. Why put an old cannon there where the kids are? But you see, that's part of what they're, you know, continue to be scared, continue to worry about it, continue to think that these terrible Arabs are going to kill you. They tell stories about, you know, that children went out and some terrorist injured or killed some. And so all groups cannot go out with some young boy with a gun. And they're walking to the old town and everywhere, walking with guns. Some in uniform, some not in uniform. And anyway, that kind of got to me, to think that they want to embrace sadness. They want to smother sadness. They want to grasp the terrible things. They want to make sure that if they keep rubbing even the young people's nose into it, maybe that's their culture, I don't know. It just seems a tragic thing to do instead of thinking about the good things and concentrating on the bad. We went through the West Bank. We went out to where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. We went to Mossad, fortress up on top of a hill. And they tell you the story about how it was all defended and all the rest. It was fascinating. It took a lot of pictures. I went into the Dead Sea. Terrible. You go. I couldn't wait to get back to the hotel to wash my feet. It was a kind of an oily feeling. It's not something you really want to bathe in. I mean, it's just not a good feeling at all. The Sea of Galilee is beautiful. I enjoyed my visit there, with the exception that they were continually trying to lobby me on their cause. But it's a great part of the world. I would tell you that I resented continually. Every once in a while, they were trying to show us how well they treated the Palestinians. And it was almost, to me, it smacked of down south, mm-hmm. how they were, I mean, in America. Mm-hmm. And you see how well we treat our slaves? It smacked of that. To me, it did. They'd say, see how we take care of them, see how we do this. And these are not people who want to be taken care of. They want a home. I tell my friends a number of times, I said, you know, to give them an idea about that part of the world. I say to them, who are the Palestinians? And then I'd answer the question. I'd say, they're people from Palestine. And then I'd say, where's Palestine?
Yeah.
Well, so that, see, like we're Americans. We're mm-hmm. from America. If somebody took over, and we were displaced, we're still Americans, but we don't own our own country. My good friend Sammy Call had a great line. You know, we're talking about that God had said this was for the Jewish people. And Sammy said, God's not a real estate agent. Well, it is terrible under the guise of a religion. That's so much torment. It's existed throughout the history of the world. I mean, I'm not just now talking Palestinian, which Muslims mostly, versus the Jewish race. But you go almost anywhere, it's going on in Bosnia now, you know, all of the mm-hmm. the fighting that's gone on. And you go through the history of time, and everybody is being pursuing war under the banner of Christ and God, you know, and you say, now wait a minute, I don't think God wants this to happen. So it's a shame, and there needs to be peace over there. I'll really bring you up to date. I did get, and don't get it any longer, Washington Report on the Middle East magazine. The reason I'm not getting it is every time I'd get it, I'd read it, and I'd get mad. And the things that we don't know in America about what's happening over there is incredible. I'm talking about in Israel and the West Bank and the Intifada, and I'm saying, I don't understand this. The Palestinians and the Intifada, they're using rocks and sticks, maybe some firebombs. That's what they have. The Israel has guns and bullets. And so here you have these people that are fighting with sticks and rocks, fighting against people with bullets. It is that stark. It is no different than that.
Why is it that we don't hear this other side of the story?
Well, when the Intifada first started, and that was televised. That was on the news. You could see the Israeli soldiers beating up on the Palestinians. I mean, really beating up on them.
What is the Intifada?
What do I think of it?
Mm-hmm. And what is it comprised of? I mean, what does it mean?
I knew, but I don't know what intifada means. But can you imagine, let me put it in the simplest terms I possibly put it. You own your own home. Somebody comes and takes your home, kicks you out. Now you want your home back. It's your home. But under the understanding that we have in America, you are the enemy. You're the bad guy because you want your home back. And the guy that took it is the good guy. That's really what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. Now the Intifada, these people have been displaced. They're living in the shabbiest kinds of quarters. They do not have the same rights as Israelis do. Not at all, whether it is medical care or housing or jobs or anything. They are second-class citizens. I call it apartheid. It mm-hmm. is truly apartheid. We're worried about apartheid in South Africa. We got apartheid going over in Israel. And we are now dealing with 46, my goodness, 47, almost 50 years, 47 years of displacement. So that would mean at least now maybe three generations with the youngsters living constantly. You can imagine how this thing boils and boils and aggravated. And they took my business, they took my country, they took my home, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being oppressed. They keep building on my land. The United States doesn't help us. Double standard of the worst kind. So the Intifada was kind of the smallest kind of an escape valve, letting off steam. You know, one would expect even worse than what's happened. There are some loose cannons, terrorists, you know, not well, terrorists, maybe some would call them terrorists, like we talked earlier, or guerrilla warfare. But that doesn't represent the Palestinians. These are some people that just said, that we can't, you know, we're going to go shoot these guys. They're killing our folks. Maybe they're so inclined. But they're a small number of people. You can't lay it on all Palestinians. Well, I suppose as an American, and because I know so much about it, or at least have some feeling about it, I just really am quite frustrated by the double standard, where we are worried about South Africa, where we went to help people in Somalia, and we're getting rid of the warlords, where we have some of our efforts involved in. Obviously some soldiers involved in Bosnia and that part of the world. And yet we close our eyes to what's happening in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but we give Israel money and we give them technology and we give them military equipment. And I said, now wait a minute, this is all wrong. This is not America. This is not right. This is not fair. But it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. There's no question that our Congress is as close to Knesset as you can get. What Israel wants, Israel's going to get. And like I talked about moving the embassy, you know, there's some things they may not even want, they're going to get. And I don't know what the answer to it is. We give them billions of dollars. Recently, it was in the news about guaranteeing their loan. We treat them as if they're pure as driven snow. I don't know how our conscience allows us to do that. It isn't as if Congress doesn't know. I have a This is an annual report on human rights violation in the world, out of the State Department, a public document, condemning Israel. You've probably never heard of it. There are all kinds of United Nations resolutions ignored by Israel. Now, what other country of the world? What other country of the world will we allow that to happen?
And do you feel that they can only get away with that because of the power behind them in the United States?
That's right. And they're
why is that power so seemingly disproportionate, since there are just a small number of Jewish families in the United States? So there are a lot of Arab families,
yeah,
and Arab descent
they're
families.
They're extremely well organized. Very sophisticated. They've been going at it now for decades. The Arab Americans are beginning to do some of that, but I mean it's peanuts in terms of what the Israeli lobby has done. There are more and more Arab Americans running for office, more and more being elected to office. But very much like many, and most, I would say, immigrants, they would come, you know, usually poor. They would work hard so their children would have a better life than they did. And that would carry over to that generation to work hard so their children. And the Arab Americans are pretty much that way. This whole matter of politics and being involved in politics and all, that was the furthest thing from their mind. I mean, they're busy on a daily basis taking care of their family, doing whatever they do to make their children's life better. And it wasn't until recent years that they came to the realization that there's something terribly wrong. They worry, and I think legitimately so, about this misconception of what the Arab people are like. Usually you see them characterized with these flowing robes and rather evil-looking people. Beady eyes and a beard, and sometimes with a sword, and a pocket full of money, and you know, that's somebody wrote a book, the TV Arab, and you know how the conception of Arab Americans, and actually Arab Americans are very fine people. Well, obviously, not just Arab Americans, but they're among those immigrants that came to this country, that helped this country grow, that are devout and devoted to this country. That's not unlike people from other parts of the world. Israel is different. Here I am. My father came from Syria. I'm either a first generation born or a second generation, depends on how you count. And yet, I am, everything that I would say or do or feel relates to what I think is best interest in my country, America. I do have a knowledge about the Middle East. I do know about the people. But I'm telling you, for example, I worry about this double standard. This is my country that's doing that. I worry about my country when I know the Arab world, and particularly the oil-rich Arab world, has our economic future in their hands. I know that Israel, I don't know where they become a strategic ally. And I don't understand how they become a strategic ally of ours.
Isn't part of the rationale that they're being based in that part of the world, that area is of strategic interest to us, and that it's convenient to use that militarily via the Suez Canal, the Mediterranean, the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf. I mean, it's sort of close to a lot of conflict.
Yeah, isn't that one? But look at it. How quickly did we get to Kuwait with our equipment? And you understand that we did all of that. Israel didn't do anything. They didn't send any troops. They didn't send any airplanes. They didn't send any rockets. They didn't do anything. We did it all. So in this world today, we can move rather quickly. We don't really need them to defend us. That's number one. But number two, what Arab countries threaten the United States? The only threat really would be to reduce the supply of oil. That's not war.
And the threat of terrorism.
Well, but the threat of terrorism is not something that you can do on an international basis. You can't. How do you fight a terrorist? Really, you can't. You can't say I'm going to destroy Syria. Well, we didn't even destroy Libya. We know the terrorists came from there.
Yeah.
We destroyed some of their facilities. It was really kind of fascinating to me during the Gulf War. They were going to, God, this is terrible. Also another way of showing how America looks at us. They were going to interview Arab Americans to see what they knew about terrorists. Why the hell would I know anything about the terrorists? Why would any of my Arab American friends know anything about terrorism? You see, this is kind of a quirk in their mind. We're going to go talk to these people because they're withholding some information that they have. Mm-hmm. How would we know? I was almost cynically saying what they really should have done is to interview Irish Americans, because the only bombings and terrorism that took place was the IRA. Mm-hmm. During this whole Gulf War. Obviously they weren't bombing, they were bombing somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the only ones who were bombing anything or terrorist activities were the Irish. They should have interviewed all the Irish people in the United States. Obviously I didn't believe that, but I was just doing that by way of comparison. So how the people think of it. Well, anyway, whenever I'd read about it, the number of children, that are killed, the inaccessibility of medical facilities delayed for a long period of time. Really, you don't have enough tape for what kinds of things that I could bring forth, but it's all there. It's documented. It is part of our part of history. But we're ignoring it. We don't know about it in the United States. I don't take this Washington Report anymore. I mean, because every time I would get it, said, this is terrible. And we're still giving Israel money, and we're guaranteeing a $12 billion loan, and we'll probably pay most of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall one time I co-signed with one of our old-time salesmen, and I made every payment on the note that I co-signed on. Well. Back to where we were. Remember, I told you about Assad in our first visit. Mm-hmm. It's Israel and the U.S. on one side of the table, and the Arab world on the other. If we would just move to the side, the end of the table, so we're in between the two, mm-hmm. 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 And that's where I'd like to see us be. Neither pro or against Israel. You know, I've told some of my hot-headed friends who once get mad. I said, now wait a minute. Israel isn't going anywhere. Israel is there. If anything ever, if there's any danger to Israel, the United States is going to jump in. Forget about Israel going anywhere. It's not. You like it or dislike it, really is unimportant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In practical matters, it's there, and it's not going to go anywhere. So let's forget that part. Now, how do we get peace in the Middle East? And again, just to repeat, which I've done, when we start talking about... always talking about occupied. So Israel talks about it being occupied. The media talks about it being occupied. They're saying this is Israel. Israel talks about, well, we need to have this buffer. You know, they keep moving east or north because they need a buffer. But that's kind of fuzzy thinking, because wherever the buffer ends, they're still back-to-back with whatever country's there. You know, they moved into southern Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they moved up into southern Lebanon. But there's still a southern border of Lebanon bordering the north border of this occupied piece of land that they want as a buffer. Mm-hmm. And today we saw what happened during the Gulf War. You know, they can shoot a rocket from... from Saudi Arabia. They can shoot a rocket from Jordan. They can shoot a rocket from Syria. They can shoot a rocket from Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to have a border-to-border kind of thing. But that's the excuse we accept.
But some people say that the Palestinian minority is also discriminated against in areas that they occupy in other adjacent and not adjacent territories,
yeah.
in Jordan and
yeah.
in Lebanon
yeah.
And in Saudi Arabia.
And Syria.
In Kuwait and...